listening to Abiding Hope Church's podcast of our weekly sermons. For more information about our church, please visit abidinghope.org.
The Holy Gospel according to St. John, the 20th chapter. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciple set out and went toward the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there, and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabuni," which means great teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, 'I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God.'" Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. The Gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Christ is risen.
I am risen.
I am risen.
We are risen.
We went to this Easter proclamation a few years back. You remember the old one where we would say, "He is risen" three times? The reason we switched was because just saying "He is risen" alone made it seem like the resurrection is only really about one person, Jesus of Nazareth. But that's not exactly true. You see, the resurrection is of the Christ. And the Christ is bigger than just a person. It's bigger than just the person of Jesus. The Christ existed from the beginning of time. All things came into being through him. What came into being through him was life, and the life was the light of the world. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. We dwell in the Christ. We are always a part of the Christ. Everything in creation is a part of the Christ. And so when God resurrected Christ, God resurrected everything. Everything. I love this resurrection story from John's Gospel, the fourth Gospel. It's my favorite one. The other three are different than this one. And one of the reasons I enjoy this one so much is because of how the story unfolds with Mary in the garden. Peter and the other disciple, they had left, but Mary lingered in the garden. And then all of a sudden, we have a woman and a man in a garden. Can you think of any other biblical story that has a man and a woman in a garden. Anyone? The creation, right? This isn't an accident. This isn't an accident. In the creation story, we have God with a man and a woman in the garden, Adam and Eve, and God tells them what? What did God want them to do? What was their one command? Take care of it. Take care of everything. Because God cared about life. God wanted to perpetuate life from generation to generation to generation. It was never simply about those two people. It was about them recognizing that they were there to care for the creation so that life can perpetuate into infinity. And God put something in the garden that God said, don't touch that. What was that? It was a tree, right? It was a fruit tree. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Some folks have asked, like, why would God put the tree? Just don't put that tree there, right? Ignore that tree. Let's not have that tree. Well, when you create life, there's always the opportunity and potential for evil. It was there. But God saying, don't touch it, that was a loving thing. God said, I don't want you to know about evil. Leave that to me. I don't want you to know what it feels like to be alone, to feel like you're the only person on earth. I don't want you to know what it feels like to be abandoned or betrayed or estranged from others. I want you to live your full life, your whole life, feeling a connection to me, feeling a connection to each other, feeling a connection to creation. Don't touch that tree, because that'll mess it all up. Well, they ate the fruit of that tree, and they began to know evil. God didn't punish the people in the garden. I don't believe what happened next was a punishment. I think what God was doing was saying, now that you know evil, you're going to have a new reality. He said to the man, Adam, Adama means earth, dirt, dust. You're going to die and you're going to return to dust. That's what's going to happen to you. He said to the woman, Eve, Heva. Heva means life bearer. Childbirth, the very thing you're created to bring new life into this world, is going to be painful and difficult. And furthermore, that man that you're a part of, and he's a part of you, he's going to rule over you because he's bigger and he's stronger. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. These weren't punishments. These were new proclamations, new realities that the human beings were going to live in. And then the world went on and created division, war, famine, hierarchy, and people suffered. And then we find Jesus and Mary in this new garden. And the man died, but he didn't return to dust. Did you notice that? The curse on the man is you will die and you will return to dust. Well, that didn't happen to Jesus. He died, but he didn't return to dust. The curse had been lifted. And for the woman, she went to hold on to him because she needed to. She had to. Women had no value. Women had no rank in society. Women were the property of their fathers or of their husbands. And she was dependent on him. And she went to grab onto Jesus and he stopped her. No. No man is going to rule over you anymore. You're free. You're whole. We're equal. We're partners, the way it was intended from the beginning. And Jesus sends her, a woman, to tell the disciples, to tell his brothers that he's been raised and that everything has changed. Now, when you come to worship next week, just putting that out there. You'll hear the rest of the story, where Jesus shows up on the same day. He shows up in this locked room where the disciples are, and what does he do? He shows them his wounds. Isn't that strange? I mean, if God was going to raise the Christ, shouldn't God have healed the wounds? Fixed the wounds, stitched up the wounds, got rid of the wounds? Well, no, because the wounds are an important part of the story. Just as the Christ was wounded, the creation has been wounded. We have all been wounded. You see, as a pastor, as a theologian, I've always struggled with the concept of original sin. See, original sin teaches that we're defiled, we're polluted, we're contaminated from our very conception with sin. And there's nothing we can do about it. And God looks at us with disdain and with disgust because we're filthy. Really? Really? Those of you who have children, do you look at your children with disdain and disgust? No, you don't. They mess up, they do things, they irritate you. But you still see beauty in them. You still see goodness in them. You still love them, right? You really think we have a God who looks down God's nose at us and is disgusted by humanity? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that whole doctrine and dogma of original sin messed us up. It shamed us as human beings. What I believe in and what I hold to is original wound. You see, we come into this world connected. We come into this world physically and literally a part of someone else, right? Moms, there's a cord there. And even after that cord gets cut and we're infants and our mothers hold us and feed us, we still believe that we're still connected to her, that we're a part of her. But something happens. I don't know when, I don't know how, but something happens to every single human being at some point when we realize we're separate. We're not a part of. We're alone in this great, big, giant world. And when we experience this separateness from God, separateness from each other, separateness from the creation, we're hit with shame. What's wrong with me that I'm not connected anymore? What's wrong with me that I'm all by myself? We're hit with anger. How can this be happening? This isn't what I'm yearning for. I'm yearning for connection. I'm yearning to be a part of. We're hit with fear and anxiety. How am I going to manage through life? And we get this original wound, and we hate our wound. We hate it. It hurts. We don't like it. It scares us. We hate it. And so we put walls around it. We put barriers around it. We try to hide it, not just from other people, but from ourselves. We don't want to look at it. And then as we continue to grow, people get close to us. And guess what? They touch that wound. They say something that hits that wound. They do something to us that hits that wound, and it hurts. And what do? We react back. Richard Rohr, Franciscan Catholic priest down in Albuquerque, he says, those who do not transform their wounds are destined to transmit them. Those who do not transform their wounds are destined to transmit them. Jesus showed up in the locked room with his disciples, and he showed his wounds. He showed his wounds. He even let people touch his wounds. And guess what? He wasn't afraid. He wasn't anxious. He didn't carry shame. He didn't carry anger. He said, it's okay. Your wounds are a part of your story. It's part of who you are. And you don't have to be afraid of them anymore, because the reality is you might feel like you're alone. You might feel like you're separate. Those are just feelings. It's not real. You're always a part of God. God is with you all the time. When you feel isolated and alone, when you feel ashamed and that no one loves or cares for you, that's just your brain telling you that. It's just society, you know, putting that in you. You're loved infinitely. God is with you. God holds you. God walks with you. And God promises that the worst thing that will ever happen to you won't be the last. Now, do you ever notice that when Jesus would heal people, he wouldn't heal them and then say, see what I did for you? He never said that. He would heal people, and guess what he would say? He would say, your faith, your trust has made you well. You did this. You healed you. See, we have the capacity, through trusting in God's love, we have the capacity to look at our wounds, to see our own wounds, to put them out there, to no longer be ashamed, to no longer be afraid, to no longer be anxious, to put it out there and to work to heal ourselves, to nurture ourselves, to remind ourselves that we're not flawed, we're not damaged, we're beautiful children of God. We can do this work for ourselves, and I think we have to do this work for ourselves. But Jesus also, in that same day, when he came to the disciples, he breathed on them. As the Father sent me, so now I send you. Go and be gentle with others. Go and show people that they're connected. Go reveal to everyone that we're part of one another. Give people the courage to see their wounds, to work on themselves. Accompany them through that with gentleness and kindness and compassion. When you see somebody living out of their woundedness, compassion is the right emotion to feel, because we all ought to understand what it feels like to be in the throes of being wounded. I've been there many times, and I know you have as well. Our world is broken right now. Our world is wounded. People are suffering. People are struggling. Our society is a complete mess. And as we live as God's resurrected people, what God is calling us to do is to do our own work on our own wounds, but then to accompany others. And this isn't something that we're going to do globally. Just do this at home. Be gentle, loving, and compassionate with those you live with. Try not to touch their wounds, and certainly try not to cause new ones. Do this with your coworkers. Do this with your neighbors, with your classmates, with your friends. You see, this is what it means to be God's resurrected people, is that we know, we trust, we believe with every fiber of our being that we are part of God, we're part of each other, we're part of creation. And the reason we're here is to perpetuate life from generation to generation to generation. So I pray that you may be bold and courageous and take a hard look at yourself and your own broken places. Be in relationship with others who can accompany you, and you can walk together in doing this very difficult but meaningful and important work. And go be a vessel of light. Go be a vessel of joy, a vessel of hope, wherever you go, recognizing that every single person is broken and wounded, but they're also beloved and precious children of God. May we all embrace God's resurrected life and live as the people we're created to be. God loves each of you, and I do too. Happy Easter.